Contrary to popular wishes, we are not recording this podcast anywhere near the date we are releasing it. In fact, due to holiday commitments, in fact, we are leaving you for a period of time, we are recording this a week ahead of time.
Wow, it's like the future tomorrow or something.
So dear future me, I hope you're
having a nice time.
Yeah, I hope you haven't killed yourself or something hideous like that.
Lottery numbers will be.
Yeah. That's the other way around.
No.
So in this episode, we have news from the future in which we will all predict what will happen in the next week and almost certainly be completely wrong.
You never know.
Oh, is it supposed to be serious?
No. We all present our final game-making results, even though we still have one more week of coding. Discovery of the week for things we haven't discovered yet. Plus our hot seat, which is Andrew, and our open ballot, which of course is not open because we haven't put it online yet. So it's a closed ballot. It is one huge mess of a podcast.
It's a
we
party.
Hope you don't hate us for it. So that is season 2, episode 17 of the Touch Radar podcast. It's very exciting. We're very excited. I'm very excited. And I'm a fat Paul Hudson.
And I'm still... I probably will be Graham Morrison.
I'm a week younger Mike Saunders.
I'm Loretta.
By this time you will be, yes. Yes. Don't forget, you can subscribe to more of this basic insanity at tuxradar.com/subscribe. You will get through the door 13 fine issues of Linux Format magazine in print. It's fantastic. Take our word for it. It's really cheap, too.
Good offers.
And it may be cheaper in a week's time.
Yeah.
Or maybe more expensive. Who knows?
The economy collapses.
It'd still be a great deal.
If you subscribe, you get a free book.
Whoa.
Oh, you do, don't you?
You do, yeah. You get a great,
from
you get
A
great, yeah. A great free
only
book.
Only if you're in the UK, though. Not foreigners, sorry.
Oh, well.
So, let's step into the future with the news section,
the news.
In which we will all present one news story we think may or may not happen in the next 2 weeks, week.
Yeah.
And see how it goes.
Well, and I was absolutely amazed to read on Slashdot that Canonical Ubuntu are moving the buttons to the middle of the title bar. It's a very controversial move.
I did see that, yeah.
Have you seen the screenshots? It looks really, really weird. I think they've had so much negative feedback from moving them to one side and then to the other. They're just putting them in the middle now, which unfortunately means that there's no actual title text in the title bar anymore, so you've just got to guess what your applications are called. But
it does make sense, though.
You don't have that far to move your mouse then, I guess, do you? It's kind of equidistant between the points in
it. Also, there was that plugin that makes it read out the title bar when you select it.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's still being worked on because it uses that festival synth size, doesn't it? You are using the GIMP, like that. Yeah, it's quite strange, but that's interesting news. We'll see how long it lasts. They might move them to the bottom or, you know, just move them off entirely onto a separate monitor. So.
What I really want to do is make it, as you move your mouse towards it, make them move away. To annoy you to chase after the mouse buttons. They could do that. They're already halfway there. Obviously, they've got the power now to move it to the left or the right or the middle. So
I think it's actually worth programming a window manager like that. Just for
get me over here now.
Did you see the statement from Clement Lefebvre, the Mint lead developer?
No, I haven't been following Mint.
No, he was reacting to that decision to put the buttons in the middle of the toolbar.
Oh, what did he say?
He's all in favour of it. He says,
is it?
Great, yeah.
Wow, so this is a big change happening to Linux. Well,
a brilliant idea.
If Linux Mint approves it, yes, it's huge.
Microsoft will do it next. So,
well, how about putting the buttons vertically on the left-hand side?
Like in iTunes 10.
Well, I know that's big news. I know it's important, but I think we should really have kicked off with the news that Linus Torvalds is dead.
Is he?
Yes.
What of?
Well, sadly, it was suicide. I think he'd had enough at the end of the day.
Oh.
With Pulse Audio.
Wow. Okay.
That was mine.
There wasn't a note. And it's really sad. I think, you know, the community is really quite split about it. Andrew Morton is, of course, wrestling with Greg Kroah-Hartman in the mud right now.
Right.
To take over as the lead developer of Linus.
Do you think the Pulse Audio developers should all kill themselves as well, then, as a kind of...
Harakiri.
Yeah, just to apologise for the pain that they've inflicted on the world.
They should do that anyway.
Yeah.
They should have done that last year when it started being trickling out. But yeah, I think it's pretty sad. I'm not sure how the community responds to this news.
Is what Stallman said, yeah. Does he want a GNU / funeral? Or?
Well, now that Linux is dead, I think it's just called GNU, isn't it?
Oh, I see. Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
I should rename it back to its original title, Freaks. Or that Minix ripoff.
Well, that's related to my news story that I found this week. It's a replacement for Pulse Audio.
Oh, wow.
Called It's brilliant. It's a software and hardware combination called Null Audio.
Null? Is it the dev null device?
Well, the software sits on you install the software, and yeah, and it directs everything from Pulse Audio to the null device on your system. Right. But it also has got a little... it uses GNOME's and KDE's notification system, and this works hand-in-hand with the wireless hardware that comes with it, which is actually a bike bell.
Whoa.
So when your system makes a sound, a little notification window pops up. It says, ring me.
Right.
And then you get your bike bell. You can put it anywhere on your desktop, and you just have to ring it. So it goes, ding!
Oh, I see.
So when things happen, you don't have to worry about Pulse Audio configuration, how things are working on your system. You will always hear the sound. And also the volume control is very hands-on.
And it sounds like there's actually less latency there than in Pulse Audio.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Normally, if you send a sound to Pulse Audio, it takes about a minute for it to
come
out.
And it always works.
The problem I've got with that idea, it's great. I do want to buy one, but my desk's quite small, so I want the per-application volume control system I have in Pulse Audio right now. So do I get smaller bells for other apps? Or?
Yeah, or you could walk further away from your desk.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's true.
Are there any driver incompatibilities with this?
No, this is the great thing about it. Yeah, that's Null Audio's biggest advantage. Yeah,
I hope they ported to FreeBSD as well.
Dude,
because I like FreeBSD.
When's macOS getting that?
It already has it. It's just in a development build that I haven't released yet, and that I won't do for another 12 years.
Well, the, I think the final piece is that. Do you remember the Humble Indie Bumble? And how they released that bundle of games and gave part of the proceeds to, I think it was a charity that gave computer games to hospitals so that the kids have something to do while they were convalescing.
Child's Play.
Ubuntu has done something very similar with its Ubuntu One service. We touched on it last podcast. It's the cloud, and you can also you can buy music, and then Ubuntu gets a cut of the OGs or MP3s that you've bought through that. They've taken the decision to donate, I think it's 50% of that, to a puppy orphanage.
Oh, that's the sweetest thing I've ever heard.
It's in the Isle of Man, obviously, for tax purposes.
Right. there are many puppies on
but
the island.
At the end of the day, Canonical are giving money to help puppies.
But you see, because this is a Linux thing, I've immediately got to start a flame war about it and say they should have given it to a cat. To a kittery instead, because that's obviously far better.
Can we not just focus on how awesome Canonical are and how lovely they are?
But they've done it wrong.
And how they love puppies.
They've done it wrong. They've given the wrong distro, and they're the wrong animals.
Do we have to take a pay cut then to pay for this puppy orphanage?
Oh. Well, no, it comes from people, you know, people buying music.
Oh. To support the wrong animals.
Yeah. So should we name it Puppy Linux?
Yeah.
Well, I think Puppy Linux have released their intention to sue.
For $10 billion.
Well, I think we have a lot to thank Mike Shuttleworth for, really.
Yeah, cheers, Mike. Oh, we should also note, finally as well, that GNU Herd 1.0 has been released. Did you see that?
I didn't see that. Wow.
Oh, yeah. It's an interesting list of features now. It runs core utils, which is good. And they're working on getting Emacs running.
GLIBC?
No, not yet. It's just a statically linked init binary, basically, yeah, and some stuff from core utils. But yeah, it's 1.0, it's ready out there. And they are working on getting an X server running for 2.0, which is currently scheduled for June 2024. So, you know, they're really, really going for it now.
It's amazing work. I mean, the fact that they can do that just days after America was hit by a meteor.
Yeah, it's you know, 90% of the population has been wiped out, and oh dear.
We're looking at the 2% of the people who survived with it.
That's because of their tinfoil hats.
Always in their basements.
How much of that will or will not come true, you decide. You will know, not us. Potentially, it's more boring stuff like Java lawsuits, but I think our news is far more interesting.
Wow, you darers! You darers. Graham dared us to make a game.
Nice one, Graham.
Nice one, Graham.
Yeah, it's all finished, it's all ready to go.
a week ago, or is it 2 weeks ago? I'm not sure now that we're recording this in advance. We discussed what planning we'd done and what we intended to do. And as we're still a week away from the official release date of our games, I'm still not finished.
No?
Sorry.
You can make up features, though, because you've got a whole week to finish doing it.
No, that's true.
In that case, it's going to have 3D...
auto-stereograms, you know, the red blue glasses things.
Yeah, if you get two monitors side by side and just the colour balance
Or push your eyeballs in like that.
Yeah. Push your eyeballs in like that.
Don't do that at home.
The new photograph of you pushing your eyeballs in, yeah, in the podcast.
I really did it.
So yeah, mine's continued apace in all sorts of awesome ways which I can't possibly describe.
Wow, but it sounds
Mike,
cool.
Mike, how's yours going on?
Oh yeah, I thought I've tried to take a proper open source approach to it, so I've rewritten it 3 times, and I'm now using Haskell.
It's been forked.
It's been forked twice, and I'm writing it in Haskell with Allegro bindings as well. So you've got about 15 dependencies to install, 4 of which aren't in the official repository in a bunch of Fedora repositories. So
3 of which aren't actually using your code anymore.
Yeah, exactly. but you still have to configure, still ask for them anyway. So no, I've been cracking on. We're adding more graphics, adding more types of baddies to my scrolling shoot 'em up, and music as well. And I'm still working on trying to make it so that anybody can take this code. It's well commented. Anybody can look at it, implement their own scrolling shoot 'em up or another type of scrolling game, and make their own levels and modify it. It's all going to be, you know, GPL, BeAware, public domain, anything like that. So yeah, it's the final polishing bits, really. I've got baddies moving around, zapping each other and zapping me, and yeah, I'm toying with the idea of baddies being able to shoot each other as well, like in Doom, where animals, where they, you know, the crazy beasties to get annoyed with one another and start their own fights.
How is BeAware a free software license? Because if I fork it, yeah, if I just double the cost of someone using the software, they'd buy me and you a beer.
Well, they just get us a half each.
You have a sip, I have a sip, you have a sip, I have a sip.
Yeah, yeah. They just get some shandy or something, you know. It's
is there any limit on the beer? Is there a definition of beer?
Is
it Reinheit's Gebot defined, or can you have stuff with rice in it?
I'm going to fork it, yeah, and say it must be beer that adheres to the Reinheit's Gebot. Yeah, absolutely brilliant idea. The Bavarian BeAware license. I'm going to write that down because it's so cool.
Well done.
Well, actually, I've got quite far on with mine now. The playing is working. The interesting thing, mine was a racing game using the Asteroids movement engine with the Amiga game Rockets kind of game idea. Rockets had a really good mode that I'm trying to add, which was 2 players. So 2 people in the game could shoot and kill one another, but they could also race around this same course. I'm interested in the racing aspect, so I'm trying to add, hopefully you will know by now whether it works, a split screen racing mode so that 2 people can race around the same track and try and beat each other's times.
That's really cool.
Yeah, is this like top down view, this racing game?
Yeah, well, the thing is, it's a sideways view, really, because it's set in space. So the top of the screen is up, and the bottom of the screen is down.
There's an up in space.
Yeah.
Which way is that?
Well, it's like
north, isn't it?
It's held on. Let's say it's held on a great big meteor somewhere, because there's actually lumps of rock floating around, which you have to. They're the obstacles that you have to race around. They make the course.
Okay.
They remain static. Although in Rockets there were things like doorways that opened, a bit like Super Sprint. Do you remember? It feels a bit like Super Sprint, actually.
Right.
I should add something like that, because that adds a nice bit of variability to it. Yeah, maybe I'll look into that too, but that's how it's going at the moment.
Cool. Well, where have you been getting your graphics from?
Well, it's all vector stuff, so it's actually very, very simple. Yeah. So I don't have to worry about it. I do have to think of a title screen, something like that. So maybe I'll use some bitmap graphics for that. I don't know.
Have you thought of an actual title for the game yet?
No, not yet, no. Mm. Maybe, yeah. Well, by the time it's released, I should have. Maybe suggestions.
Give it some really, really complicated name mixed with lots of different characters. So if it ever gets covered in the magazine, it can give Andrew multiple heart attacks.
Yeah. It has to be something Rockets-y, because Rockets is the main inspiration.
K-Rockets.
Gockets.
Rockets is a brilliant game that's now free. It's shareware free.
Oh.
It's free to download if you've got an Amiga.
Great.
Well, my game is finished. I've added the high score table. I've added music from Incompetech, which is a great source of royalty for music if you're looking for music.
Incompetech?
Incompetech. As an incompetent Incompetech.
Right.
He makes really good royalty-free music. All I have to do is add Fusion, saying it by him.
Yeah, I'll have to nab some of that for my
game. Yeah, it makes a wide variety of stuff. It makes a lot of silent film stuff, so like soundtracky stuff.
Cool.
Added that in. I've actually ported it to iPad as well.
No way.
So change all the Python to Objective-C.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
Your 2 favourite languages in the world.
Yeah, I love them both dearly. So I may get an iPad release out of this.
Cool.
That's great.
So yeah, it's basically finished.
Super cool.
I should do a release, shouldn't I, really? In fact, I may release it. I may have already released it.
You get second syndrome, and you want to redo it.
Now I want to read it because I, you know, it means that everyone has a chance to fiddle around with it and give some feedback too.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Cool.
So next month, then, does anyone have any ideas?
Should we
open this one out to let people, you know, tell us what to do, or are we happy letting Graham?
I have an idea.
Oh, that sounds ominous. I'm going out.
Does it involve Python?
It doesn't involve Python. If you want to challenge us to do stuff, please do. Leave a comment. Leave multiple comments. Leave as many challenges. In the meantime, we'll challenge ourselves. My idea is following on Graham's game theme, but a bit easier. I think we should all create a text adventure.
A text adventure?
Which is Linux related.
Okay, so what, using one of those game engines like Infocom or something like that?
Inform is the language that they use.
So it's natural language. You type, the book is in the study, and it goes, okay, the study is a place, so the book is in there, it's an object picked up.
Right, it's nice and easy then, yeah. Yeah, so we can all do it. Programming.
It has to be Linux related somehow.
Okay.
So, you know.
Like the Adventures of Torvalds or something
like that. Yeah, sure. Yeah. You are compiling Gen 2. Wait. Right. You are still compiling Gen 2. Wait.
Go to 10. Yes. That's a full game already. Yes. Just like I'm actually compiling Gen 2.
What a great game that would be. So yes, it has to be Linux related text adventure. And listeners, I encourage you to join in with this challenge.
make your own.
That's a good
idea. Make your own text adventure. We will host them all on Tux Radar. And if you submit them in time, email me at paul.hudson@futurenet.com. Email me your game. If you have time, we will play them beforehand and let you know what we think.
Hang on, when is in time for the benefit of our non-telepathic listeners?
Well, given that this is recorded in the future or in the past.
It's so complicated. The space-time fabric has been ripped apart.
Someone get some sort of calendar up.
Okay, this is going out on the 16th, so 2 weeks from the 16th to the 30th.
Right, so send us something. Send us your game to look at before the 27th of September. That means the 26th is the absolute last day you can send your entries in. Send it, you know, please, same rules. Text adventure using the standard sort of Linux-y natural language toolkit we can all play back. If it's something funny, let us know what app to use, but please stick to the standards and make it Linux-y, something free software-y.
What day is the 26th?
It's
Sunday.
All right.
So our magazine deadline is the 28th, then?
Quite possibly.
Yes.
Hooray. It's all coming together.
Please don't send Paul any text adventures. I want him to finish the magazine.
And with that, we dare you, dare us. Combination. We come to the halfway point of our podcast. In remarkably quick time, still to come, our hot seat this time with the inimitable Andrew Gregory, and our open ballot, which is a closed ballot, because this is recorded in the future.
All right, without further ado, let's head straight on to discovery of the fortnight. Who wants to go first this time? Who's brimming?
Mine's lame.
Okay.
Let's get out of the way quickly.
Right.
Do you remember in the past, I revealed to you in a previous discovery of the fortnight the name for the little metal shoe holes in your shoe?
I'm sorry,
an end of laces.
Yeah.
What they are?
Spigots?
No. They are aglets.
Aglets.
Andrew was quite clever. They're called aglets. But this is my new discovery. They are part of a larger group of things, ringy, metally things. That's the only way to describe them, really. For example, in a pencil with an eraser on the end, what's the name for the metally bit that holds the eraser on?
I've asked myself that for years.
You always want to know this question. Well, the answer is, they are all called ferrules.
Oh.
Ferrules.
From the metal.
Yeah. So it's the name for a metal band that attaches one thing to another thing.
Hmm.
And then, like, a pencil to a razor, or, you know, on a shoelace, the metal. Yeah.
I might rename my game from Vizbooks to that.
So you don't need to sink a screw directly into the wood,
because
then it'll move around.
Yeah.
If you put a metal thing in there, it's more secure.
Exactly. That was obviously the design thinking behind Feral Designers, a team. Thought of that.
Is the design open sourced?
That was mine, isn't it? Great.
That cool. is amazing, yeah. Graham, can you top that?
I can top it in name. My discovery is something called the Plop Bootloader.
Is this that a recursive acronym? Plop, it's load, real. Open.
And it's better than Grub, I think. It is a bootloader replacement, so you stick it on
it's
your...
It's better than Grub. Is that any surprise?
Well, Grub is versatile. I mean, you have to... Well,
the GIMP is versatile.
Yeah, okay. It is. It is almost as configurable as the Grub, which is scary, but it's easier to install. It sits on the MBR, so it's the same kind of thing. And you can make it look nice with a graphical interface, or you can have a text interface. There's command line stuff you can do there. You can fix your partition tables. You can get to a simple command line. You can, interestingly, you can boot USB devices from the Plot bootloader screen. So if you're using an old machine that can't boot from a USB device, for example, you can boot off a disk or whatever you can.
That's really good, because normally you need to get like super boot disk or something to do that.
Yeah, exactly. So this will let you boot directly to a USB device from there. You know, it handles up to 20 partitions or something like that. You know, boots all variants, Linux and Windows 2.
Well, I just saw on somebody's Android phone not so long ago an augmented reality program called Layar. I don't know if you guys have heard of it before.
It's on the iPhone as well.
Is it on the iPhone? Right. I found it fascinating because there are quite a few programs like this where they show you places. So you can hold up the phone and you tell you where museums are and eateries and stuff like that.
Cool.
But this one is all... they have this big community as well where people are making their own maps and information.
There's a big gay community that does it, isn't there?
A gay community? that I didn't see, but you can actually use it to find like the energy efficiency of buildings around you or crime hotspots. If you've got to walk from one side of the city
really?
To the other
yeah.
one, you can look at the areas that are really bad and just walk around them.
Or you can walk past the buildings that are losing a lot of heat, so you stay warm.
And absorb them, yeah, in winter, exactly. And you can even use it to find other Layar developers as well.
I didn't realise it was that adaptable.
Yeah, there's this whole community, hundreds and hundreds of these Layar plugins, facilities, whatever you call it,
yeah.
you know. Lots of obvious stuff like where's the nearest McDonald's and things like that, but I thought, yeah, crime hotspots.
Yeah, yeah, that's good.
Of course, it's a bit worrying if you stand somewhere, turn it on, and it says everywhere around you is a crime hotspot.
Oh no!
Where am I going to go?
Well, you're holding your posh phone out.
Yeah, yeah, waving around in the air. All these shifty looking guys are about to approach you. So, yeah, that's pretty cool. Layar. Layar.
excuse me.
And Andrew, to finish.
My discovery is an item of German vocabulary.
Cool.
It's in the tradition of awesome German words. It's made out of several other words. It's the word is Schlimmbesserung.
Bad improvement?
Yes.
Wow, Schlimmbesserung. It's, it'd be Schlimmbesserung as well, wouldn't it?
It would, because it's Ung.
Yeah,
there yes.
we go. Awesome.
Yeah, there we go. How cool are we? So it literally means bad improvement, but the nuances are it's used to describe something which was meant to be an improvement, but which has actually made something worse.
Is this a relatively new word?
I don't think so.
Sort of around the date of KDE4's release.
Or Pulse Audio.
Or moving the menu buttons in Ubuntu. It's a Schlimmbesserung. You know? It encapsulates a neat idea in one word.
Yeah, yeah.
And...
It's a long word.
It's not as long as Eisenbahn Knottelpunkt, for instance, or Lebensmittelvergiftung.
Yeah.
Both of which are silly words, by the way. Silly Germans. But congratulations on Schlimmbesserung.
Yeah.
I had a German discovery too, I just wasn't going to mention it. Hauschka, the musician. I think he's from Dortmund. That's Andy Schnell's going. Yeah, he's a composer, which someone recommended to listen to on Spotify. He's an ambient, sort of Graham-style composer.
It was all piano stuff, wasn't it?
Prepared piano, yeah. There's strings now.
Prepared piano, so dropping nuts and bolts.
Yeah, it's with strings, yes. Yeah. It's really, really beautiful, though. It's new stuff, fantastic. So I think it's called Ferndorf, his new thing. But listen to it.
Oh.
Hauschka.
Good for working, too?
Yeah, definitely. Better than your David Sylvian. Which
approaching science.
Properly eerie music. I was freaked out listening to that music.
Yeah, music for museum installations. It's now time for In the Hot Seat. This episode's star is going to be Andrew Gregory. And as ever, we don't know what he's going to talk about because the answer is on the Wheel of Destiny, which I'm happy to say, I think I'm going to spin this
one. No, hang on, it's my turn.
No, I'd like to do it,
well,
Mike.
Well, no, Graham, you know, we're good friends and everything, but this is really up to
you.
So here we go. Right, I'm spinning it. No, I'm spinning it. Right.
No.
Yes, yeah. Just get your hands off.
No. No, you take this.
My eyes. No. What have you done? No. I can't see.
I will spin the wheel. Around it goes. And it's Grum. No.
Can Mike spin the wheel?
Yeah, it's not Grum, it's just Geeks.
Geeks?
Geeks, eh?
Geeks.
If I'd spun the wheel, it would have been Grum.
Would have been Grum.
No, you.
Not quite sure what that means, but take it away however you feel like. Do you want a timer? Or are you
free to why rant? Not?
Your internal time will tell you when you're out of time. Your timer. Your 1 minute to talk non-stop on the subject of geeks. If you pause, we will squeak the squeaky ball, which we haven't got. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Take it away.
Quite by coincidence, I was looking at the Wikipedia page for geeks early this morning. And apparently a geek is someone who is... Who wrote this? Someone who's obsessed with one or more thing. That's a really rubbish definition, because that means that a geek could be anyone. When we talk about geeks, we're normally mean computer geeks, people with big beards who like to eat bits of their feet. but really, there's more to it like that. If you look on the forums and listen to the free software types chatting away, you realise that geeks aren't just obsessively weird people who live in their parents' basements. No, they have other geeky obsessions, such as Mike, for instance, who loves free software and nonsense like that.
Mm.
No, not free software.
Open source.
Classical music.
Oh, yeah.
That was the phrase I was looking for. And Graham over here, who likes pretending to be Carol Smiley of an evening. We're a diverse and fascinating bunch. We like all sorts of cool stuff, so don't be ashamed, be proud, be a geek, love it.
Well done.
I'm loving it.
You were slightly 2 seconds over, but don't worry, we'll let you off. It was worth it for the Carol Smiley thing. It's a pretty bad disguise, isn't it, really?
That's why he got so het up over spinning the Wheel of Destiny.
Who is Karen Smiley?
Who is Carol Smiley?
Carol or Karen?
Enough of that.
Hey.
Enough of that. It's now time for... But this episode has to be a closed ballot because... Doing it ahead of time and because we just weren't organised enough, which we can't even organise ourselves when we're doing a proper podcast. Anyway, this episode's closed ballot question for the four of us is it time to do away with the command line?
The command what?
The command line, that beautiful little thing, the text adventure that's part of every Linux system. Is it time to let people... because the command line scares an awful lot of people. In fact, I think most of the time when I say that I work with Linux, people say, if they don't know about it, say, oh, is that the one where you have to type in commands to do anything? Or the commands part of it really scares me.
Is that the one where you have to recompile your kernel?
Well, yeah, through the command line.
How do they learn these words?
Is that like DOS?
Well, yeah, I think for a long time people have thought that Linux and Unix, maybe from movies in the 70s and 80s, is...
And Jurassic Park.
Yeah. Is accessed by typing things into little amber or green terminals and lots of things start appearing.
As the velociraptors chomp down your door.
Wait, where's the fan page for this? Where are the new examples?
Maybe it's surprising that no distribution has been brave enough to actually just get rid of it completely. But then neither has OS X. So if OS X is the best usability, least scary operating system in the world, and they haven't got rid of the terminal.
Well, Windows has it, doesn't it? Windows 7 has a terminal.
That really is a scary terminal.
Yeah, it's incredibly insane. PowerShell.
Yeah. So is it time? Do you think it's time?
I think maybe part of the problem is that the Linux and GNU and Unix command line is so good. You know, you've got lots of great tools, piping things together, command history. It's really, really useful. It's really very, very usable.
If you're technical.
Yes, yeah, but then it means that geeks and developers just think of solutions with a command line. I was thinking back for a moment at old RISC OS on the Acorn machines.
Which you seem to mention every episode.
I'm sponsored by Acorn. Yeah. That great powerhouse of computing.
Well, no, that's become ARM, hasn't it?
Well, yeah. In parts, yeah. But I was saying, that command line was really, really awful. It just gave you a star and you had to work out what to do. It was really bad. So in a way, it made sense to always have solutions to problems that were graphical because the command line was so, so horrible. Whereas, the command line Linux is, when you get to know it, it's so comfortable.
Yeah. But I think the real answer, well, at least for me, is that we can't possibly get rid of the command line for some of us, for most of us. But in certain instances, for certain people, then yes, I think we should get rid of the command line. I think we should get rid of the command line from Ubuntu. I think, I think it's a massive advantage to people to say, look, there is no command line interface.
Perhaps that would be an interesting experiment. Get Canonical or some other company to make a version of Ubuntu but remove any link to Xterm or and then give it to people and say, right, use this for a month. And when people come across something they realise they can't do without the command line, or they come across instructions, then they mark that down as a problem.
Yeah,
if it's a day-to-day task, you know, if you read instructions, it says to check what USB key is, enter D message. You should never have to do that. It should be obvious. Yeah. So that might be a way to find out. I might make a distro just removing all terminals.
There should never be a need for normal people.
For day-to-day distributions, never, ever a need, yeah.
Well, the natural one to do that would surely be SUSE, because it's already got YAST, which does so much of the configuration stuff for you anyway.
Yes, that's true, yeah. We could use SUSE Studio to rebuild a distro without a terminal.
Yeah. And it wouldn't be as if you'd completely abolished the concept of a terminal, would it? It would still be there.
Probably press Control Alt and F1 or F2.
Yeah. But it would be an interesting experiment to see what five or so tasks people still do at the command line.
And fix it once and for all.
Yeah. Just get rid of those.
Yeah.
Leave it still there for us geeks who want to run LDD on a binary.
But it's never going to go away for most people.
Which
I think
good,
it's impossible.
I love it. Yeah.
I don't want it to go away, because things like source control. I feel very comfortable with source control on the command line, and there are probably some really fantastic GUIs for source control, but I still quite like the command line.
Yeah.
Sadly, here at Future, we still use Subversion for everything, but I can just check things in. It's like, uploading it, it's done. It's really quite clear what's going on. I can see history very easily. And it'd have to be a very, very good GUI to top that kind of simple usability.
Well, GUIs can also scare people even more. If you're teaching somebody, like, programming like C, you can tell them to type gcc-o foo.c and that's it. If you gave them a GUI, all the panels that would have to be available to turn on and off all the GCC options would be completely terrifying. So in a way, some command line things can make
Whereas the man page for that is great, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, but then the solution is to create a GUI that's adaptable for people who, for most common uses of GCC.
Well, the thing is, basically the way it's handled elsewhere is it says it's like a field saying enter any GCC directives you want to give here, and you add as many as you want.
Right, so the ones you already know about, yeah.
Yeah, so the ones you have to know about to add them in the man page.
Yeah.
I don't think it was command line, so I just think it was directive, and it makes sense.
Yes, yeah, that's true. It's an option to type in, yeah.
I think also it'll make it difficult for executing binaries. I mean, it's all right. I still download binaries or compile binaries, but then double-clicking on them in...
Do you want to show these in text editors? What?
Yeah, exactly. Because there really isn't a system for that.
No, but the problem is if something fails at the command line, so...
Yeah.
My game, I'm working on Pygame thing. Hopefully, people can double-click it and it will work. But if they're missing Pygame, it will just do nothing.
Yeah.
Whereas what it really should do is open... If you run it from the command line, you'll get the obvious answer that you haven't got Pygame installed. So there needs to be some sort of framework. You don't want to end up running everything via a terminal, because it will cause a horrible mess on the screen. But there needs to be some way to get standard error and standard out. And chuck that into a notification.
Yeah, that's true. Well, that's true. Yeah.
Clearly, in an ideal world, you just have made a deb for it and have included everything.
Yeah, statically linked everything together, including the whole Python interpreter. Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
It's in Qt Creator, Nokia's Qt Creator. It's got an integrated. It creates DMG packages for OS X, which I think is really nice. It works as well.
Mm.
It's a pity there's not something similar. Of course, it's impossible to make something similar for Linux, but that would. Sidestep the problem.
Same why it's impossible to do a standard out thing. Bring a message box. Well, how do you do that? Are you running GTK or QT or something else?
Use X dialog, that horrible thing.
Well, it's a shame because it's one of those things that could be standardized.
Yeah.
It should be standardized. Yeah.
Send a message to the screen. And then internally it goes, oh, I'm using QT. That means do this. The code should just say, send a message to user in this message box.
Well, maybe this is something the desktop should implement.
Yeah, yeah.
You double-click an executable in the file manager.
XDG should do this, basically.
Yeah. And then it won't just fail. It won't just leave you blank, because that is a real problem.
And we're only actually thinking of these things as we're working through in our heads what
on
it would be like to not actually have the command line.
This is important.
It would be a valuable experiment, I think.
Well, we have done an experiment before, haven't we? Trying not to use the command line for a certain time, or only using the command line. But for day-to-day users, I think it'd be a fascinating thing the community and SUSE Canonical can do.
Yeah.
Is this a four-page feature?
Well, obviously it's possible to do, because I don't think Windows users use the command line. It's not very pleasant. I mean, the ones who installed Cygwin or what do they call it?
Mingua.
Microsoft Services for Unix, the official version.
Oh, yeah.
Bundled with Windows 7 Ultimate, I think. You can use it then, and you get all the Unixy stuff, fair enough. But generally, PowerShell is a complete nightmare. It gets really overcomplicated. And the plain command line is really poor. It's DOS. So that's really changed. So they all manage to get by somehow without the command line. You know, they aren't restricted. There are some really powerful developers working on Windows. They manage somehow until it gets doable.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's because they're configuration files and think this the file system isn't based on some ancient command line operating system.
I feel so 2 weeks ago. So what are we saying? Can get rid of it or can't get rid of it?
I think we should be able to do away with it. I think we'll never get it. The literal answer is no. But I think the diplomatic answer for there's no reason why my mum should have to use or ever have to resort to the command line if I install Linux on her machine.
Yeah. I said recently in the magazine that so many of our Q&A answers start with open the command line and.
Yeah.
And that's depressing. If you've got a problem, open the command line should not be the solution unless it's really, really desperate.
And that's probably mostly because there's no standard, because you can't say, oh, if you're using GNOME, do this, if you're using KDE, do this. Exactly. But on the command line, you can actually guess it's going to be bash.
Yes.
You know?
That's absolutely true. Yeah, I've long argued the cause that there should be some really standard core configuration tools across distros, like user management. If you have a tutorial and you say how to add a user, it's easier to say do the command line, because that's always going to be user add or add user. I forget which one's the better one. But if you write a tutorial and say, well, if you're running SUSE, then open YAS. If you're running Mantra, then open the control center. I would love to see the point where all distros have their own config tools, whatever, but there's like a menu in every single distro that's like five or so config tools for networking users that you can always rely on in any tutorial. They are always there.
Yeah, yeah.
Possibly the things that small businesses would do most often.
Yeah.
So that they don't get scared by the massive training costs.
Well, yeah, there's the point. Yeah, you can transfer your skills across distros, allow them to learn a billion different configuration tools.
And whenever I make the Tux Radar song number 2, I'll use that exact line. 1 billion configuration tools.
I'm just writing it as I go along here.
Yeah.
I'm just freestyling.
You're a poet. You didn't know it. And with that, dreaming and wishing, come to the end of our podcast.
Wait.
Sure. Mike, come on, it's sunny outside, it's lunchtime.
I know, but you haven't proved yourself to be complete, proper, full-on geeks yet. So I need you to answer a question for me.
Israeli.
Almost, but that's completely wrong.
1998.
So, right. In the kernel source code, there's a file called maintainers. How many Linux kernel maintainers are there? How many names are listed there?
1,798.
Paul says 1,798.
There's Andrew Morton. There's Greg Crower-Hartman.
Yeah.
There's Andrew Tridgell.
Andreas Heger.
There's Linus Torvalds.
I think he's still going, isn't he? Wasn't he dead?
Oh, he's dead. Oh, sorry. In that case, there's only five.
Okay, five. 1,700. Five, and Graham's estimate.
1,798.
Oh, all right. Wow.
That was a good year.
70.
70. It's actually 1,027. I don't know how many of those are active, but they're all listed in the maintainers file, so... If you've ever had a problem with the TTY layer or something like that, I'm sure
That means he was closest.
Damn. You said 1,700 and Graham said 70 and the answer was 1,027. That means you were close.
No, I correctly just said 1,798.
Oh, right.
So I made myself wrong by correcting you. Dear future me.
Oh, dear. Doesn't bode well, does it?
No.
Oh, Alan Cox. I forgot Alan Cox.
Oh, yeah. So you're on to six. get back to us on that one.
You forgot Ted Cho, too. Ted Cho's ace.
He doesn't have the beard of the Coxmeister.
Doesn't have the beard of the Coxmeister, no. And with such beardy lovings, we come to the real end of our podcast. Don't forget, all the notes for this podcast. There'll be... Actually, we've done a massive notes revision. it's available in five different formats, PDF, ODT, everything, many pages long, full explanation of all the in-jokes.
We're just going to put the wiki up there and you can create them yourself.
Exactly, yes.
It's got Java Swahili support.
They are on the podcast, or will be in a week, on the site in the future. And, of course, we are looking to read out your comments. We're looking to play your awesome text adventure games.
I can't wait.
Please. To do all this, please get in touch. Give us more challenges. Get in touch at paul.hudson@futurenet.com, and I will read your emails. See you in 2 weeks.
Bye. Or 3 weeks. In the future.
Bye.
3 weeks.
Simpson Nice.